haven't decided if I'm going to wear my headdress and my kusbuk or my official DC-type gown with all the sequins and the high heels and all that.
Alaskans celebrate the inauguration of the next president. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, the 19th of January. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Alaska Native groups push to participate in the country's economic stimulus plan.
We're ready to help this country pull out of this recession, and we want to be a part of it. We don't want it done to us. We want to be a part of it and help drive it.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The University of Alaska Fairbanks now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. Begin your UAF fisheries degree at any major University of Alaska campus and finish in Fairbanks or Juneau. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
With only about 12 hours left in President George Bush's term, a pardon for former Senator Ted Stevens is unlikely. The New York Times is reporting Bush commuted two sentences earlier today in his final acts of clemency without any mention of Stevens. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski had asked the president to pardon her former colleague. Murkowski put in the request earlier this month, according to her communications director, Michael Brumis. Brumis would not give more details, saying, quote, "It's a sensitive matter and it's a sensitive time right now." The Constitution gives the president power to grant pardons to whomever he chooses. Recent presidents have made numerous last-minute pardons before leaving office. Former Senator Stevens was convicted in October on 7 felony counts of lying on his financial disclosure forms about gifts worth more than $250,000. He has vowed to fight the charges and says he plans to appeal. When reporters asked Stevens in November if he would himself seek a pardon, he dismissed questions and said he wants to clear his name. Congressman Don Young won't say if he requested a pardon for Stevens. Hundreds, if not thousands, of Alaskans are among the millions of people gathered in Washington, D.C. for President-elect Barack Obama's swearing-in ceremony tomorrow. As APRN's Libby Casey reports, the Alaskans attending range in age, race, beliefs, and backgrounds, but they're sharing the thrill of witnessing history.
Irma Perry came from Palmer to be in Washington this week. She grew up in Texas at a time when the nation was segregated. And as an African-American woman, seeing the first black president take the oath for the nation's highest office is electrifying.
It's very exciting, and to live from the time they had separate fountains, colored and white fountains, to come from that, from segregated schools, and to live to see an African American become president of the United States of America. Oh, it's just a blessing to be able to be here, and I wanted to be a part of it.
Perry cast her vote for Barack Obama with her family. She says her mother valued voting so much that she sacrificed to have a voice. She had to pay a poll tax in Texas for the right to vote. So Irma Perry is especially proud to be in the nation's capital with some of her family members to share this experience.
And then to be here, you know, hopefully to witness the swearing in of our first African-American family and a first lady that looks like, reflect my image, the image of my daughter that could be my daughter. My God, it's just awesome.
It's not only African-American Alaskans who identify with President-elect Obama. Cynthia Awanona says as an Inupiat, she hopes that Obama will listen to her community.
As far as American Indian Alaska Native issues are concerned, that I think we're hopeful that we can have more of an open door, open policy, more sympathetic towards our issues, similar issues along with African-Americans. So hopefully that's, and it's just historic. It's just everyone is so excited. This newly elected president is very charismatic. His wife is very charismatic. And it's just everybody's so excited. I mean, you can see it everywhere here in Washington, D.C., on Metro, on the buses, as you're walking into the buildings, as you stand in lines. It's just everybody is very excited.
Awanona grew up in Nome, but she's lived in Washington for more than 30 years now, working for Republican Congressman Don Young and in the House of Representatives. She has 36 friends and relatives coming from all over Alaska this week, Unalakleet, Kotzebue, and Dillingham. Besides the thrill of Tuesday's swearing-in ceremony and the parade, in which some Alaskans will march, there are the inaugural balls. Awanona plans to attend the American Indian Ball on Tuesday night. She says the number of people going is twice what it usually is because there's so much excitement about this election.
I traditionally get all dolled up. I haven't decided if I'm going to wear my headdress and my kusbuk or my official D.C. type gown with all the sequins and the high heels and all that, so I haven't decided yet. I have them both out.
The big event, though, the swearing-in ceremony, requires getting up early on Tuesday morning, and for Alaskans who just arrived in town, jet lag won't help. 11-year-old Timothy Flanagan from Juneau plans to get up at 5 in the morning with his parents, but that may feel like 1 a.m. Alaska time.
Normally I stay up to 1 if I could. So getting up at 1 is going to be a lot harder.
Flanagan and his family plan to dress warm in sensible Alaskan layers and prepare for a long day.
There's not going to be that many bathrooms. We heard that it's a ratio of 500 people for one bathroom, which is pretty big. So we're going to have to be prepared for that.
Flanagan wears a bold Obama T-shirt, and even though he's only 11 years old, he knocked on doors in Juneau during the campaign to spread the word about Obama. His parents say in his Democratic-leaning family, he was the first Obama supporter. Flanagan says he's ready to witness history.
I think he's a really great person, because, like, not just politically, but I think he would be someone, like, a good friend and stuff, so it's going to be pretty neat.
Flanagan says he also can't wait to be in a crowd of millions of people, far more than live in his hometown of Juneau or even all of Alaska. So many people gather together to celebrate and witness Barack Obama become president. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
Three performance groups will represent Alaska at the presidential inauguration tomorrow, including a Native dance group from Barrow. KBRW reporter Janelle Everett watched their last practice.
Obama, Obama. 22 dancers from Barrow will join millions of others who are in Washington, D.C. to participate in the inaugural ceremonies of President-elect Barack Obama and Vice-President-elect Joe Biden. The Surrey Manachuat Dance Group, led by Elder Warren Matumiak, will perform before President-elect Obama and millions of others as part of the celebration. Rex Okakuk, a member of the dance group, a retired whaler, and a delegate at the National Democratic Convention last summer, says he contacted the inaugural committee repeatedly, trying to secure an invitation for their group.
I was the one that made applications to participate in the parade. And when I did make an application, my application was too late to be considered, but I kept after the committee, I think, until they got tired of hearing from me, and one day they approved it.
Before leaving for D.C. over the weekend, the group practiced the song they will perform for President Obama. One-year-old Warren Matumiak wrote the song for the president in 2 days. He explains its meaning.
I'm saying, Obama, Obama, we come from long ways to visit you. The message we want to bring him is that there is our father up there who is watching us. We ask elected President Obama, when he's having a hard time, then ask him to remember him above our Father and ask him to help this heavy load, you know, help him. That's encouraging him to do that.
As the dance group approaches the dais where the president, vice president, and other dignitaries sit, Matumiak's teenage grandson will perform the dance. The dance group waged a massive fundraising effort to pay for the trip, with donations coming in from as far away as Canada. They will stay at a private residence in D.C. The only other Alaska group participating in the inaugural ceremonies is Colony High School's marching band. As practice ended Thursday night, Matumiak reminded the dancers to bring their parkas for the trip. Temperatures are expected to be in the upper 20s to low 30s for the inauguration ceremony and parade. Reporting from Barrow, Alaska, I'm Janelle Effort.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the unseasonably warm weather delays the start of the Tustamina 200 sled dog race.
Even if we got like 3 or 4 inches today, it still wouldn't give us enough time to start the race on Friday.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Alaska Public Radio Network builds bridges of communication between urban and rural Alaska. APRN covering the stories that impact the lives of all Alaskans.
The legislature is gearing up for this year's regular session that gets underway tomorrow afternoon at the Capitol in Juneau. Among the questions facing lawmakers this year will be a new importance on providing energy to Alaskans in a time when the state's revenue is dwindling. Joining us from the Capitol is APRN's Dave Donaldson. Hi, Dave.
Hi there.
Dave, are you expecting any real problems with the budget, since everyone knows that there's less money available than they've had in the past few years?
Well, you know, the budget is the big issue. It is every year. But the big problem comes with not knowing how much income the state's going to have. The budget the governor introduced back in December based it on oil selling at $74.41 a barrel. And legislators are looking at current prices in the low 30s. And, you know, the average right now shows the state is still in the black, but they're being very cautious about committing to spending money 18 months from now on that $74 estimate. They just don't know that it'll go back up anywhere near that. The alternative to going ahead and accepting that and facing, you know, and accepting the governor's plan is to start cutting expenses, which they really don't want to get into, or to go into the reserve accounts that they're really saving, they would like to save for some later expenses back, you know, when oil really does go down. It's just way too early right now to know how it's all going to work itself out, but it is a concern.
And Dave, energy has been high on everyone's priority list. The governor released a plan just recently that looks toward a lot more renewable energy sources. Do you see this lining up with the legislature? Is there a change in that priority?
There's not a change in the priority. There is a change, though, in their source of information. The Energy Authority itself just has not done a very good job of justifying some of the projects and the way that things are going to be selected. You know, it's not political viewpoint. It's just responsible fiscal management that is not seeming to be followed. Last year, they spent $6 million on renewable energy grants. And some of the officials with the authority didn't even know who some of the applicants were. They had not really vetted those projects. This year, the explanations and the current $100 million price list or project list, it's very sketchy right now as to what's there and who's behind it and how they justify it and so forth. So there are a lot of questions, for example, about any of the renewable projects. There are questions about the Healy Clean Coal Project that was announced last week, the in-state gas line. It's going to take some selling by the administration to remove this friction.
We'll have to anticipate the nature of the relationship between the legislature and the governor, just as every year. Frequently, there's conflict. What are you hearing about how it's stacking up this year?
Yeah, we're just going to have to wait. See, she uses her personal diplomacy and her tact to get priorities identified and passed, and she's really good at that. But she's also been distracted for the last several months now. She's not going to get a free ride this year. She got that for the first year and a little bit last year, but I don't think she's going to be able to say, you know, politics as usual in case she loses something. And That's been her free pass through the legislative process in the past. So, you know, this year they haven't had enough input from her. They're expecting after the state of the state, you know, to perhaps have some more direction, depending on what she says that actually relates to Alaska and the legislature. But meanwhile, I am seeing a whole lot more bipartisan collaboration between the House and Senate than I usually see at this time of year. I think we could see a legislative front develop this year in dealing with the administration if they need to. So it's going to be some interesting personal politics.
All right. Thanks, Dave, for that update.
My pleasure.
APRN's Dave Donaldson reporting from Juneau. The Alaska Marine Highway System is designing the next generation of state ferries, but it says it's at least a year away from putting a ship out to bid. One Southeast lawmaker wants action sooner. Representative Peggy Wilson says she'll introduce legislation calling for three new ferries to be built. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Ferry managers already have draft plans for two ships. One would sail Lynn Canal, connecting Skagway, Haines, and Juneau. The other would travel Dixon Entrance, linking Ketchikan and Prince Rupert. But they've been moving toward a different approach. They want a single design that can handle both routes, as well as others along Southeast's Inside Passage. Ferry System Chief Jim Beadle says a working group will soon go public with plans for what it's calling the Alaska-class ferry. It would be the first of a new generation of ships that would eventually replace much of the system's aging fleet.
This ferry will be environmentally responsible, fuel efficient, and versatile. It will enhance Alaska Marine Highway operations on current and future routes within inside waters and enable the Alaska Marine Highway System to continue its tradition of providing safe, reliable service.
The ferry system already has $60 million for a new vessel and was expected to ask the legislature for another $20 million this session. But Beadle says ship construction costs are skyrocketing and he decided to wait so he could give lawmakers a more accurate figure.
Right now we've got a concept. We don't even have on paper what this thing's really going to look like and how much steel is going to be involved in this vessel. So it's very hard to get a firm price on it.
He'll take plans to the Marine Highways Advisory Board, the legislature, and the public before finishing the design. He expects to be ready to go out to bid by March of 2010. But some lawmakers and ferry supporters want to start setting aside money now. Wrangell Republican Representative Peggy Wilson says it's time to make a commitment to build three new ferries.
If you do it all at once, and that company knows that you're going to do three all that are the same, you actually can save one third, and that's actually getting one ferry free.
She doesn't have a cost figure yet, but says it's being researched and will be part of legislation she'll introduce. Both Wilson and ferry managers want conventional steel-plated monohull ships that can carry several hundred people. Neither is looking at the last generation of new vessels, the smaller aluminum-hulled catamarans known as fast ferries. But Beadle is talking about boats that sail in the day and tie up overnight. Wilson wants ships that can handle multi-day trips.
I'm looking at something that can go all the way up to Lynn Canal and back to Prince Rupert. And then we can use the smaller ferries in other areas and lots of times in shorter trips so that we can make more trips.
Both plans call for ferries with crew quarters so ships can overnight outside their home ports. Beadle says multi-day trips will likely require passenger staterooms, adding to construction and operating expenses.
The problem with staterooms is as soon as you start putting more public services on there, it draws more and more employees onto the vessel and it draws up the cost of operation.
Southeast lawmakers will have a voice in the process. Wilson chairs the House Transportation Committee and Angoon Democrat Albert Kukesh heads up the Senate's panel. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting from Juneau.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Rasmussen Foundation is announcing March 1st as the deadline to apply for an Individual Artist Awards grant, which provides funding directly to artists to support their creative work. You can sign up to participate in one of the Rasmussen information sessions to be held the week of January 19th by calling 297-2876 or go online at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
A group of senators is urging President-elect Barack Obama to include Indian Country in his economic recovery plan. North Dakota Democratic Senator Byron Dorgan has proposed investing more than $3.5 billion of the expected stimulus package in Native American and Alaska Native communities. Both of Alaska's senators have signed on to his proposal. Dorgan says as communities around the country clamor for a piece of the stimulus package, Indian Country should not be left behind.
It is by far the most significant area of unmet needs in law enforcement, education, roads, and so many different areas. And for that reason, there needs to be a component, not earmarked, but a component that understands and recognizes and addresses these needs, all of which are job creating.
Last week, the Senate Indian Affairs Committee, which Dorgan chairs, took testimony on ways to create jobs and stimulate the economy of Indian Country. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski serves as vice chair. She said the entire country is in a tough economic situation with job losses and tight budgets. But she says that's something Native Americans have long dealt with.
It is not a good situation, but I think many out in Indian Country are saying, well, kind of welcome to our world in a very hard and a very harsh way. And I'm not saying that it's good or it's acceptable in any way, but it is a reality that has been faced in corners of our country for far too long, that the economic situation has been in crisis.
Alaska Federation of Natives President Julie Kitka testified at the hearing. She wants to see the economic stimulus plan make long-term investments, not just kickstart the economy. Kitka told the gathered senators that it's up to them to include Native communities in the stimulus plan.
It really is going to take this committee to bring that message to the leadership in the Congress and to the administration that Native Americans shouldn't be left behind. We're some of the largest landowners in the country. We have tremendous energy resources. We have a tremendous capacity that's been developing for decades all across the country in the Native Americans. And we're ready to help this country pull out of this recession. And we want to be a part of it. We don't want it done to us. We want to be a part of it and help drive it.
Kitka also brought a message to the committee that the Western Alaska village of Imanik is in crisis because of high fuel costs. She warned that it's one of many villages facing dire circumstances.
The choice between whether or not to heat your home or to have food for your family is real. We could have growing problems, and we really do need help in this recovery to bring down the cost of energy to make it affordable. We need greater emergency relief capabilities to deal with food shortage problems.
Senator Murkowski pressed one of the other witnesses testifying for solutions to the situation in Imanik. Bob Middleton, the director of the Office of Indian Energy and Economic Development at the Interior Department, promised to look into the problem and said he hoped emergency provisions of the General Assistance Program might be available for the village. A Craig landmark is almost certainly on its way out. For years, a building known as the Old Blue Float House has been the subject of tourists' photographs and a source of aggravation for the city. As KRBD's Jay Marble reports, hopes for saving the roadside attraction are sinking.
It's been called the most photographed float house in Alaska. That's a difficult claim to verify, but it does make an impression on people. An internet search using Craig Alaska and float house will likely bring up pictures of the nearshore structure in its various stages of glory and disrepair. The last year has been especially hard on it. It has split in two, rotated, and is partially submerged. The windows have been exploding as it's shifted, and parts are drifting away, upsetting boaters. No one has lived in the float house for several months. Owner George McNamara has been feeling the pressure from the city, which is feeling pressure from the state, because at low tide, the float house rests on the tidelands, and the state does not like that. Recently, the city made McNamara an offer of $500 for the float house, the idea being that the city could then quickly make it disappear. At a recent city council meeting, McNamara gave them his answer. He'd rather rebuild than sell.
I'll have it out of the water so it's all floating nice and high in a week. Because I got the tools to do that. I got a 4-ton come along finally. And after that, it's a matter of just of tearing the part that's dilapidated down and disposing of it. And that will take a little while. And sprucing up the other part a little bit. So middle of July or maybe first, you know, somewhere in there. Better be back to there and be there again.
McNamara's assurances that when he was done, the float house would look about the same as it did before, and that in the event that he did decide that the float house was beyond repair, he'd be happy to take the city up on the $500 offer, did not change the mood of the council. City Administrator John Bowling encouraged the council to not say anything that would give the impression that the float house could ever be used as a residence again. I'm Jay Marble.
After a warm weather delay, 16 mushers are on the trail of the Kuskokwim 300. The race started yesterday afternoon after being postponed for 2 days. Denali musher Jeff King is currently in the lead, followed closely by Martin Boozer of Big Lake and John Baker of Kotzebue. Mitch Seavey and Ken Anderson round out the tightly grouped top five. In all, 12 mushers are out of the Kalskag checkpoint, less than 100 miles from the finish line. The start date of the Tustamina 200 sled dog race on the Kenai Peninsula has been postponed for a week. The race had been scheduled to begin Saturday the 24th, but will now start January 31st at 11 a.m. Race Executive Director Tammy Murray says last week's warm, rainy weather is the culprit.
We are hoping for more snow and a little cold weather to get the trails in shape. Even if we got like 3 or 4 inches today, it still wouldn't give us enough time to start the race on Friday and get the trails ready. So giving us that extra week gives us more time to get them in shape. And that's something we're pretty famous for, is our well-marked trail.
The T200 Board of Directors made the call Saturday night. In addition to the 200-mile race, the Tustamina 100 and the 50-mile Junior T races have both been postponed. The board also decided to extend the registration deadline by a week to this Friday and increase the size of the purse from $15,000 to $20,000. This is the 25th anniversary of the T200, and Murray says it's rarely ever been postponed.
I believe they've delayed it once. And then started, and they had to cancel it one time.
She says some mushers may have to drop out due to preparations for the Yukon Quest, which starts February 14th, but she expects most of the field to remain intact.
Lance Mackey will be here. He's the returning champion. John Little, Paul Gebhardt, Dean Osmar, who's the founder of the race, will be mushing. And then also his son Tim will be mushing with Rachel Skidoris. So we've got a really fun group of mushers.
Murray says the biggest challenge will be to get race volunteers to rearrange their schedules around the new start time. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Janelle Everett in Barrow, Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Casey Kelly in Homer, and Jay Marble in Craig. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. John Prophet is our webmaster. Duncan Moon is our vice president for media production. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Didn't quite catch that report? Want to hear it again? APRN can be heard on the web at www.aprn.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.